My friend Mark asked me this morning if I had ever chaired a meeting in front of 1,500 people. I thought about it a minute and I said, no, I don't think I have, but maybe I've chaired 100 meetings in front of 15 people, so it all bounces out. I had the pleasure of meeting our speaker last night and chatted with him a while, and I'm sure he's got a good message for us, so we're going to move right along and get to our speaker, John V. from South Berlin, Massachusetts.
Good morning. I said to my wife, Kathy, let's go. Probably nobody will show up anyway. It's too early in the morning. I consider myself to be fortunate, to be lucky. You know, we are trained in AA to look back and to see what it used to be like and what happened and what it's like today. What it's like today for me is good. I would have never dreamed or believed that if I should stay sober, that one day somebody would call me up all the way from Lexington, Kentucky. I didn't even know that a part of the country was in existence. You know, I'm one of those Skid Row bums. I arrived here when I was about 28 years old. That's many moons ago. From a mission. By that time, I've been in skids for 8 years and couldn't read and write, covered with wine sores and dirty, never been married and never owned a car. And I was thinking about that last night when I was listening to a speaker. First man I met in AA, of all people, the first man I met in AA was a lawyer. He was sober 13 years and in Central Group in Syracuse, New York, every Friday night, he would stood at the door and he would shake hands to everyone who came to that meeting. And of course, I arrived in AA with a man who came to see me in a mission, not an Indian friend. He told me that you had coffee and donuts and they were free. Instead, I met this man and he grabbed my hand with his two hands and he said that he was glad to see me. And I didn't. I sat down and my first speaker in AA was Lady Judge. And she wanted me to identify. And she screwed my mind, because I met judges before. One judge told me one time that I faced him 43 times, and he never once asked me to try to identify. All I want to do is get my donut and get the hell out of there. But there was this lawyer, you know, of all people, a lawyer. It's interesting, you know, when you look back one day with so much training that you get in the program, you can see things straight. You can understand things. That's what makes people like me grateful. You know, I realize I've been a bum for a long time. And you know, when you look the way I do, you don't meet no one. Put his arms around you and he says he's glad to see you. Even people in AA don't do that. I suppose it takes, St. Francis in our 11th step talks about, he said something that I've always liked. Lord, he says, I pray that I may understand rather than to be understood. And he understood. You know, I can tell you a lot of goodies this morning, simply because there was once a man who understood that I was lost. I didn't belong to a people like this. I had wine sores, I had long hair, I was dirty, couldn't read and write. And I'm in the mission, supposed to pay 35 cents a night, and I'm behind 3 weeks' rent. You know, I have financial problems. So I got my coffee and donuts, and I was getting the hell out of there, and he stopped me. He says to me that, before you leave, how about meeting some of my friends? And thank God he didn't say that he was a lawyer or that he was sober 13 years. Because what I think touched me was the people in AA, the spirit of AA. I have always felt that the spirit of AA is something very special for most of us. It seems that he tells everybody that you're okay. And it gives you that very strong feeling that you belong here. And after a while, you express that feeling very strongly. Not only that you belong here, but you really work hard to belong here. Now, I have never belonged anywhere. You know, I left home when I was 14 years old. My father drank too much. He died early. And 5 years later, after he died, 8 members of my family died. All my family died with TB. I had twin brothers died in 1 year. And my mother died when I was 13 with TB. Of course, those days were difficult for me. I developed a lot of fears. I somehow developed an imaginary attitude that my people treated me like if I was dying too. And of course, and it was very real. And of course, my mind didn't change until many years later, as I was attending the recovery program, when I have learned to know myself a little bit, then I realized that most of my life I seek rejection. And I found it in my own home. And it wasn't that my people didn't want me. I believe it has been a part of my sickness that has never allowed me to belong in life. And so I lived an old empty house in a reservation with a dog after my mother died. And I couldn't sleep because I'm also a person who suffers from an obsession. I can become obsessed overnight, forever. And my obsession was that I was dying. And I had all kinds of pains and all kinds of fears. And every day people look at me like if I was dying. And I discovered something that stayed with me for many years when I was 13 years old. I discovered that if I could pretend hard enough that I'm somebody somewhere else, I could find enough peace to fall asleep. It really never meant anything to me until many years later when I understood something about life. I realize now that to escape is comfortable. But escape also denies you from who you are. We are told in our recovery, nobody grows by escaping from himself. The recovery is in faith. Faith, in my judgment, is not comfortable. It is too often asked me to do something that I have found it's very difficult to do. But I have learned that faith is the only thing that allows this Indian to go from where he is with what he has in life. So while maybe it is not comfortable, too often I would head in that direction because I want to get well. But I knew nothing about escape nor faith at the age of 13. It worked, so I've used it. I left home when I was 14 because I wasn't wanted at home. My people worked in lumber camps in Maine. I arrived in Patton, Maine one day, and I asked if I could get a job in lumber camp, but I was too young, and they didn't hire people who were too young. The Second World War took most of the younger people, and they needed a dishwasher 20 miles in the woods, a place called a CC camp. And the fellow said, if you wish to walk that far, it's up to you. So I did, and I arrived in lumber camp, and I met a man by the name of Bill Leinster, who was in charge, and I was with him for 4 years, washing dishes in lumber camp. When I was 18 years old, I left. He suggested that I should be with the younger people. So I went to Quebec City to join the Canadian Infantry, where I spent 3.5 years washing more damn dishes. My real problem started in Canadian Army. If had I known that they would give me a job washing dishes, I would have never joined, because I never really been a patriotic person. Sick as I was then, I knew that this country was ours before it was yours. I was hoping maybe I can win a medal without getting hurt, because I'm a very sensitive person. I can get hurt very easily, and I don't suffer well. I say my problem started there because washing dishes told me one thing that I couldn't live with, I had trouble living with, told me that I wasn't as good as the next person. And I didn't realize that, you know, you learn so much in AA about yourself, about the program. A person who don't believe in anything will seek approval from his fellow man. He wants his fellow man to give him something to make him feel that he is something. And that is a very lonely way and very painful way of trying to live. I like people to like me. And I certainly like to say something that wouldn't make me feel stupid. But there has to be something more in life than what people can give me. And this is something that I have never had. I have never had anything to stand on. And yet, I admired courage. I have always did. I remember the first time I seen a picture of John Wayne. I loved John Wayne. I never particularly cared the way he killed Indians. But you know, somewhere in the picture, he would do something because he believes it. And sometimes it would be dangerous. But that's the beautiful thing I think about us human beings. You know that someday we stand on something that makes one individual is something in life. God made us that way. I have always want other people to give me something that I learned much later in life that I have right to choose. but it is so scary. And I'm so afraid. And I'm nothing. And nobody cares. But I, in the army, I had a terrible time for 3.5 years because I told lies. And I am basically, especially when I was young, I never particularly liked to tell lies. But it became, like everything else in life, became very easy. I didn't, but I also would avoid it. I wouldn't go out with girls when I was in the army, and I was old enough to know I should. No, I'm sick, not stupid. I was glad when I got my discharge. I was 21 years old, and I was with a friend. We bought a suit. We got all dressed up. We went to a place called a Bluery Cafe in Montreal. And it was in the third floor. A nice cafe. As you walk in, they had a four-piece orchestra. And in front, it was a girl singing, practically with no clothes on. And I think that's where I received my first spiritual experience. And then I took a drink. I love to drink. You know, I look back many times, and drink was made for me. And I don't know why I loved to get drunk so much, whether it was because of the effect, you know, you hear that many times in AA, or because I was so happy to get away from the reality that I never was comfortable with. Or maybe because that when I drank, I could do things that I've always wanted to do. I don't know why, but I do know that once I took a drink, I liked it, and I liked everybody around me. Someone said last night about change. Boy, do I change when I drank. You know, I could care less where you find out I wash dishes forever. I don't ever remember being sensitive that I was an Indian or I had no education or that I didn't talk with English. The thought never entered in my mind when I drank. You know, I get that wonderful feeling that not only that I belong there, but boy, you say something about me and you'll find out. That brought me more trouble. You know, I could. You know, how many times your people in AA said you can dance better? Well, you don't dance better. It's like falling in love every night, the best-looking girl in the world. But she is not the best-looking girl in the world because, you know, alcohol affects your vision. I thought so, too, until I woke up the next morning. I looked at her, and I said, holy Christ, you know. But I think the beautiful thing about it, you take a drink again and you fall in love all over again. And that kind of craziness I love. You know, too bad I could never do it sober. You know, I was speaking an anniversary with Al-Anon lady, and I have no one say anything wrong with Al-Anon ladies. But this lady, she keeps saying about 4 times that she never woke up with strange men. I thought for a while she was complaining. Because I drank to wake up with strange women. I mean, if I could have done it sober, I wouldn't drink. Not only I drank to wake up with strange women, I was glad I did. I like about drinking. I can talk to anybody that I never could do when I'm sober. I love fights. Every once in a while I get that feeling when I drank that I could lick anyone. And that's a very dangerous feeling for me. I had a bartender named Smitty. They name a bar after him. Well, Smitty used to work in our area because in Syracuse, New York, we had our areas. New York Indians drink in one area, and I'm a Mi'kmaq Indian from Canada, so we had our area. And we do that because we don't communicate too well. And every once in a while, about 20 of us Mi'kmaqs would get drunk, and we'd go to Smitty's, where all the New York Indians drink. And we would communicate. As a matter of fact, that's where I lost my four teeth. But sometimes I feel like I could lick anyone. Then I would go to Smitty's. And I would wait for an Indian to come in. Then I would stare at him. And if you don't stare back at me, I'll go and tell him, you know, I don't like you. And he would say, look, I don't want any trouble. I said, it's too damn bad. Because you're going to get it anyway. And then we start a fight and they call the cops. And that's when the fun starts. Because that's when I can show everybody who they're dealing with. And it was fun because these were the days when I was drinking socially. And when they get to know me, they would send 3-4 of them. And they would arrest me. And next morning, I'm in the court, and this policeman brought his pants with him. One leg was missing. And he held his pants up, and judge was laughing because it was funny, so I laughed too. And people in the court, everybody was laughing. And the judge said, well, John, he calls me John. You know, when you meet the judge 43 times, he calls you John. He said, what's the problem? I said, I have nothing against him. All I did is try to put him down, but he's so fat, his pants came first. And judge was hysterical. So is the people and myself until he gave me 6 months. Then I stopped laughing. But these were the days when I had fun in drinking. And I'm sure if I could continue on, because you see, living in Skids for me was home. You know, I never, when I said this morning, and Kathy and I, you know, my wife and I, we've been on vacation since last Thursday. We took 24 days. We're on our way to Florida tomorrow. You know, we live like a white man, dollar down. When I said this morning that I've never dreamed to be a place like this, you know, this is really a class. We have a nice king-size bed. We went out and had lunch last night. All you have to do is sign your name. I mean, this is life. Well, I never expect this. I never dreamed that I never wanted or thought that I was going to live like this. It never entered in my mind. I belonged in Skids. It was my home. My problem started in Skids when alcohol no longer allowed me to do the things that I was enjoying doing. No more falling in love every night. No more fighting with cops. You know. No more dancing. You know, you drink and alcohol, that's nothing. So I wanted to stop long before I arrived here. I really tried. The only way I knew how to stop was to take a pledge. The bums used to say to me, John, you look sick, why don't you take a pledge? And you know, when a bum tells you you look sick, you're sick. But pledge is it's something that you promise. You know, and if you can't keep your promise, well, you know, it's just another way of telling you that you're different. There's something wrong with you. Pledge never worked for me. You understand why. Tom in the mission, God knows Tom liked bums. You know, anytime I needed the bed, I would attend the services. And if I attended services, he would give me a free bed. As a matter of fact, one night, I was sitting there when a fella got up and he said that for many years he was a bum just like us. And he said, one night in this mission, I accepted Christ as my personal savior. And since then, he said, I got married. He bought a new station wagon. He bought a home and he works nights. And then he says, any of you bums can do the same thing. All you have to do is move forward. Well, I've always wanted a station wagon and a nice girl and nice clothes. I never cared to work, whether it was night or day. But it sounded so simple, I moved forward. And I knew nothing about Christ. I used to listen to lumberjacks talking about him. And, you know, and by the time they finished with him, you wouldn't believe him either. But I moved forward, and this guy kneeled down next to me, and he said I was saved until the next morning when I met the judge. And he told me that the Fayette Park in Syracuse was for the decent people to go there on Sundays, and I agree with him because that's the way I felt about myself. But when I was invited to come here, when I was in a mission that night, when this guy came to see me, you know, I once met him before in Tupper Lake, New York. He brought me home. He was married then with a nurse, and he had a nice home. But he lost everything, and he wound up in Salvation Army, and he got sober in AA, and some bum says to him, you know, you got one of your brothers in a mission, and he looks like he could use help. So he walked in one night, and he asked me to come here. And that's almost 29 years ago. And I came here, and I was touched, I'm sure. Maybe because, I don't know, we stay in AA, we're ready. And perhaps that's true. But the thing that is important to me was that something happened to me that told me that I should come back. Because, you see, I needed to come back. I needed to learn what I have learned here. First of all, you know, I'm not a bad person. You know, but I am a guilt-ridden person. I have lived with guilt long before I know what to do to be guilty. You know, I swear, when I was born, doctor held me up by my 2 feet and he said, look, you little bastard. When he spanked me on my ass, you're going to be guilty all your life and don't you ever forget it. And I never forgotten it. The message came true, loud and clear. But a guilt is an emotion that cripples. Too often you make decisions based on guilt. And I think when we were born, when God gave us a right to choose, we didn't give us right to choose through guilt. And guilty people are those who cannot get away from themselves. I like what St. Francis said, for it is in self-forgetting that you find. Christ, I never could go away long enough away from myself to learn anything. But I came back and I learned. Last night the speaker was talking about being powerless. Not because you're bad, or because you don't believe, or because you're not wealthy or not well educated. I understood what it meant, and as the years has gone by, I've learned more about powerlessness. And I've learned that when I first came to AA. You know. But in my days, there was no step meetings. And every meeting in Syracuse, they would read the steps and fifth chapter, how it works, and traditions, and later on you learn to memorize them. But they didn't mean too much to me. I met my sponsor here, Pat. Pat is someone I never liked. He was a bum longer than I am. I knew Pat. He had a degree. Do you know, there is nothing worse than a bum with a degree. They never let you forget it. But I met Pat in Central Group, all dressed up. He had a girl, and he comes to me and he said, "John, I'm your sponsor." And he says, I have a new car. And every night he would pick me up in a mission. Sometimes he would bring me a sandwich. He used to say he can only eat half of it. One day someone said to me, because I've always talked about it as the years gone by, a few years ago someone said to me, "Do you ever stop and think that Pat never eats sandwiches?" It's amazing how you learn things. 29 years later, I'm here in this beautiful place. Still cannot read and write too well. Never improved my English language. I tried, but... And yet I'm free. I'm still an Indian. And yet not only then I'm free, but last night I understand the speaker. I knew what he was talking about. You know. But you know, I'm free because there have been some people in my life who took time. Some special people in my life, and I suppose we all have. One of them was Pat. You know, Pat would stop the car and bought a sandwich. And when you do that to someone in a mission, you don't look for attention, because they can't give you. You're not looking something from someone, especially when he's a bum in a mission, but you are giving something. They say that's the greatest gift that you can give is yourself. And I am old enough and wise enough in AA to realize it was true. Especially in those days when I'm not the easy person to help. I'm also a perfectionist. I didn't know I was a perfectionist. You know, I mean, if you see me laying in the sidewalk with long hair, wine sores, and dirty, would you stop and say, "Now, this man is a perfectionist"? I mean, you're not that smart either. But when Pat was late, about 15 minutes late to pick me up, and he's always late, I wouldn't go with him. The hell with you. If you can't come to pick me up on time, you can drop that. I'll walk. I'll show him. Pull along with me, you know, 20 below zero, I'm walking a mile to show Pat that he's a damn stupid. Can't come on time. All he wanted me is to leave the mission. He said I couldn't stay sober and live with those bums, and I wouldn't leave. But one night, mission burned down. 3 o'clock in the morning, I knocked at the door and I said to Pat, "Mission burned down." And he said, "That's the grace of God." And they brought me to, next morning, to a 12-step house. And I worked there for a year. They paid me $7.50 a week, and I lived there. My job was to wash floors, wax them, to answer the telephone, make coffee, and wash dishes. But I get thrown out of there. Some girl, her name was Han, I never met her, but I remember she was drunk and she needed help. There were these AA people playing cards every night, and I told them that someone needed help, and when they find out who she was, they told me that she's been around for years and that's all she does is use people in AA. But I know it was wrong. But I never knew what to do when I'm right. The way that I've lived all my life, that if you hurt me, then you give me right to hurt you back. You know, in AA you learn about understanding. And the 10-step talks about restraint. 11-step talks about walk on what you believe in. Don't let other people control you with their ideas, with their emotions. You don't have to be perfect, but you can be effective just the way you are. You learn all these things much later. But when you're growing in AA, it's very, very difficult to deal with facts sometimes. Now, I knew they were wrong. And when I'm an AA person, I'll fight for AA. I did too. I upset the table while they were playing cards. And one of them I didn't like. I punched him right in his mouth. And I knocked him down right on his ass. And that was my first 12-step call. I could have started my own group. But they throw me out. And 3 o'clock in the morning, Pat picked me up and he brought me to his home. And next day he brought me to Major Harvey in Salvation Army, where I stayed about 3 years. Went to meetings every night, and I had this little card telling me I can come home at 11 o'clock. But I got lost in AA because there were no step meetings. And you know, in my 5th year of sobriety, I was in skids. And I was uncomfortable. I left Syracuse. I walked out of there. And 3 o'clock one morning, I walked into Marlboro, Mass. in my 5th year of sobriety, and I slept in a men's room in a hotel. And there I met Paul, who owned a restaurant. He says to me, "John, they're starting a new meeting in Worcester Monday night. Would you like to come?" And I said, "Sure, I've always loved AA." And I walked into my first step meeting about 24 years ago, where I met a fellow, a good friend today, Father Fred. Father Fred was sober a couple of years then. Eddie D. Sober 40 years now. He's a newspaper reporter. Great AA. Fellow by the name of Dr. John, Irene, the radio, had a radio show, and there were a lot of these big heads, big brains. There were a lot of people there, but these are the people I kind of looked up to. And I walked into my first meeting, and what they did over there was read these pages. First time I've heard that they would read 7-8 pages in the first step, and after they finished, people from different walks of life would express their ideas and their insights as to what this means to them. And you know, you didn't mean nothing to me. I suppose if you ask me a question that night and say, "John, now you're sober 5 years, what would you really like to have?" Well, I would probably say, "Well, I would like to have a nice home and a lot of money. I mean, a lot of it." "And beautiful girl. I mean, beautiful girl, not just any girl. A lot of nice clothes and a big job and a new car, and I would feel better." There is a good chance that in those 5 years I sat next to people who had all these things. Nice wives at home, nice children, money, some of them, new car. But you see, they felt the same thing inside, and that's something I couldn't separate. I didn't understand my sickness. I didn't know. I certainly didn't believe that night that I needed the program of recovery. I didn't believe that. I needed to come back. And thank God, I've always loved AA. I came back. And Paul, who owned the restaurant, says to me one day, "John, Rita, she's a waitress, works with Paul. She said she wants someone to paint her house. Could you paint a house?" Because I was sleeping in a men's room in a hotel. I needed a little help, you know. So I went over and I gave her an estimate of $300, and she gave me a job because other contractors wanted $1,200 to $1,400. And then I said to Paul, I got a job, but I don't have any money. And he says, go back and ask Rita. She might give you some money. And she did. She gave me $100. That's how I started. I figured if I'm going to be a president in my own company, I should buy a white coverall. Bought some paint. And Saturday night, I went to a meeting. And I met a man who worked in a telephone company. And he loaned me a ladder. And he delivered it. I finished his job, and I owed Paul $65 worth of groceries. Then I met a plumber in AA. Said, John, I have a ranch house about 7 miles from here. All you need is a little stepladder. So I borrowed that, and I got all my drop cloths together, and I stood in the corner, and I stopped a bug. This guy looks at my ladder, and he looks at me, and he says, you can't be serious. I said, I am. I'm self-employed. And he wasn't all that well put together himself. He says to me, if I give you a ride, would you promise you'll never do it again? My next job was school teacher. She taught school 40 years, and she retired. I asked her one day, because I've learned that there were 69 questions if you wish to have a driving license. I asked her if she could help me to memorize them. She said, I have taught thousands of people. And 3 months later, or a couple of months later, I knew the questions inside out. And when I went to take my test, I knew I would pass. This guy, he brought me to this little room, and he only asked me 2 questions. I mean, I'm sitting there, and he said, that's all. And I was insulted. I mean, I didn't want to leave. I got all this education, and you think anybody cares? You know? Nobody gives a damn. My poor sponsor, Pat, no wonder he suffered so much. With his degrees. Paul, who owned a restaurant, came to see me with an 11th passenger station wagon, one of those black ones. For $750, he said, it's yours, and I had no money, but I borrowed $250 where I was working. And a girl in Marlboro Group, she co-signed for me. So here I was in my 50-year sobriety. I was president in my own company. And I had a driving license and 11-passenger station wagon. So I decided to find me a girlfriend. But I had this 4 teeth missing, I told you. And I figured you couldn't find a type of a girl that I wanted with 4 teeth missing. So I started looking for a dentist in AA. Someone told me there's a new dentist in AA. So I went over to see him, and I cornered him one night, and I said to him, I'm looking for help. He said, what's the problem? I said, well, I'm looking for a girlfriend, but I have this 4 teeth missing. So he gave me his card, and 2 months later, I have this new set of teeth. Then I met a girl in AA. She ran a home of alcoholic women they call Faith House. She says to me, John, I'm told you have a car. I said, 11 passengers. She said, I have 9 girls. I'm looking for someone to bring these girls to a meeting. Would you like the job? I said, I'll be happy to. And that's where I met Kathy, my wife. On our way back that night, I said to her, would you like to go out on a date? And she said, no. I mean, she didn't even think. A person who seeks rejection don't miss that at all. And on my way home, I said to myself, who in the hell she thinks she is? Here she is with those girls. None of them have anything. And here I am. I'm president in my own company. I have a new set of teeth. and I ride around with 11 passenger station wagon. Who the hell wants them anyway? So Thursday night, we picked the girls again, or I picked the girls again, and on our way back, I said to her, would you like to go to a show in Boston? And she said, yes, and we did. And on our way back, I asked her to marry me. She said, I don't even know you. I said, it's all right, we still have 5 miles to go, we'll get acquainted. So 3 months later, we got married. Nobody showed up, and we had $85. So we went on our honeymoon, and we came back with $35, and we moved into a three-room apartment, paid, I think, $11.50 or $13 a week. And Kathy and I walked in there, neither one of us had anything. You know, no radio, no clothes, no furniture, no bed, no blankets, nothing. We had a coffee table that was given to us from where she was in the Faith House. But even newlyweds couldn't sleep in coffee tables. So. So we slept on the floor. But you know, you can have fun on the floor too. You know. I spoke in Westchester County one day and I mentioned that, you know, and there's rich people out there. After the meeting, this rich lady came to me and she said, young man, I don't know how much fun you can have on the floor, she said, but I know you can have a lot of fun in the Oriental rug. I said, thank God you identified. But while we're laying on the floor, I said to Kathy, you know, I would like to have a boy. Because I'm the only one left. So this Christmas, my wife was in a hospital, waiting for a boy. Calls me up, 3 o'clock in the morning or something. She said, honey, it's a girl. And I was disappointed. I always do when I don't get things my way. That's why I always had a problem with God. He has his own ways and he has my ways. But next Christmas came along and my wife was in there again. Called me up, she's still crying. She said, honey, it's a girl. But you know they say experience is a great teacher. I said to her, don't worry about it, just have an open mind and we'll try again. I've learned that in AA. Next Christmas came along. My wife called me up and she's still crying. This time it's twin boys. So you know what I say, if you work hard enough, God will give you what you want. 2 years later, Rita came along. And a couple of years later, Bill. So my wife and I have 6 children. And they're all grown up. We got the old 2 girls are married. We're expecting, supposed to be this week sometimes, our second oldest daughter, our first grandchild. We got 2 girls married. The oldest daughter is in the program. And we have 2 kids in college. One of the twins is in Germany now going to some kind of university up there. He's learning language. He talks like 4 languages. We have a youngest daughter, Rita. She's in the university. And one of the twins works for me. I have finally, as the years gone by, got my license as a general contractor. It took me 15 years. And one of my twins works for me, and we have another boy, 17 years old, and all our kids are doing great. And I thank that for my wife, who stayed home, and being an insecure person, I had to work many hours, you know, because I underbed myself. And I talk to my wife so much, maybe you like to meet her. Kathy, would you like to stand up? So in closing, if you asked me what AA has given you, I would tell you, Philip, very simply, to be long-eared, not necessarily standing up here, but to be able to enjoy your beautiful hotel, king-size bed, signing a check, somebody else paying for it. But to understand you when you speak and to feel that I belong here, that is my greatest gift. Because without that, I couldn't enjoy anything else. Kathy and I are leaving in the morning to go to Florida for the next 2 weeks. I bought her a new Chrysler of Fifth Avenue, not Fourth, Fifth Avenue. I told you to live like a white man. And when I go to bed at night, when I thank God, this is what I thank God for. Finally, I'm just John the Indian, and it's okay. Thank you very much.